And Jessica is an epidemiologist with the meningitis and vaccine preventable diseases branch at CDC. And today she will be presenting on meningococcal conjugate vaccine failures in the U.S.
Good morning, everyone. As Tammy said, today I'll be presenting on the meningococcal conjugate vaccine failures or breakthrough cases that we've observed so far in the United States. To begin with some background information, meningococcal disease is caused by the bacterium Neisseria meningitidis, and cases typically present with either meningitis or bacteremia. The case fatality rate from meningococcal disease is approximately 10 to 15%, and as many as 20% of survivors have permanent sequelae. There are several underlying immune defects that put people at increased risk for meningococcal disease. Deficiencies in the terminal complement pathway and functional or atomic asplenia are widely recognized as risk factors for meningococcal disease. However, diseases associated with immunosuppression and other diseases associated with transient complement deficiencies may also place people at increased risk of disease. This is a cross-sectional view of the Neisseria meningitidis cell membrane, and many of the meningococcus virulence factors are located in its outer membrane. Importantly, the capsular polysaccharide, which surrounds the organism, is what determines the serogroup. There are at least 13 recognized meningococcal serogroups. However, in the United States, the majority of disease is caused by only three, serogroups B, C, and Y. The meningococcal conjugate vaccine, or MCV4, was licensed in the United States in 2005. It's a quadrivalent vaccine that protects against serogroups A, C, Y, and W135, but it does not provide protection against serogroup B disease. It is currently licensed for use in persons 2 to 55 years of age, and ACIP recommendations call for routine use in adolescents 11 to 18 years of age and others at increased risk of disease. And to help understand why ACIP recommends routine vaccination of adolescents, this graph shows the annual number of cases of meningococcal disease in the United States in children less than 21 years of age. And as you can see, the largest disease burden is in children less than 1 year of age. However, a large proportion of that disease is caused by serogroup B. The incidence of meningococcal disease increases again in adolescents, and most of the disease in this adolescent age group is actually caused by the vaccine-preventable serogroups. Coverage with MCV4 has improved since it was first licensed and recommended in 2005. Coverage with MCV4 among 13 to 17-year-olds has been measured by the National Teen Immunization Survey in both 2006 and 2007. And in 2006, coverage among 13 to 17-year-olds was estimated to be 12%. By 2007, coverage had increased to about 32% in these age groups. As part of CDC's post-licensure evaluation of MCV4, we are currently conducting a matched case control study. An enrollment in the case control study began in January 2006, and it's still ongoing. However, enrollment's been very slow, partly because adolescents are particularly a difficult age group to enroll, but also because the incidence of meningococcal disease has been very low in recent years. So in the meantime, we've begun to use the screening method to try to estimate vaccine effectiveness and have been conducting surveillance for breakthrough cases as a first step in this analysis. So today I'll be presenting the cases we have identified through our surveillance for breakthrough disease following vaccination with MCV4. And our objectives of this analysis were to determine the number of cases of meningococcal disease in vaccinated persons since licensure in 2005, and to describe the epidemiology of the breakthrough cases. To be counted as a breakthrough case, cases either had to have isolation of a vaccine-preventable serogroup of Neisseria meningitidis or a detection of DNA from a vaccine-preventable serogroup in a clinical specimen taken from a normally sterile site more than 10 days after vaccination with MCV4. The time period of surveillance for breakthrough cases that I'm presenting today was January 2005 to December 2008, and we identified our cases from two sources. The first was through case report forms that were submitted from either ABCs, which are active bacterial core surveillance sites, or meningitis sites that are participating in our MCV4 effectiveness case control study, and we also identified cases that had been reported through the Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System. And to talk a little bit more about our data sources, ABCs performs active laboratory-based surveillance for culture-confirmed cases of Neisseria meningitidis, And PCR positive cases are traditionally not reported through ABCs, but they were collected as part of the case control study. The meningitis sites perform enhanced surveillance for culture-confirmed or PCR-positive cases of meningococcal disease, and these sites were originally included as part of the case control study, but have now expanded their surveillance activities for meningococcal disease. And in these ABCs and meningitis sites, we expect that most, if not all, meningococcal disease is being reported to the state health departments. VAERS, on the other hand, is a completely different type of surveillance system. It's a passive surveillance system that collects reports of any adverse event following vaccination, including cases of breakthrough disease. And as you will see, all of these sources have been important in identifying cases of breakthrough disease for us. This map shows the ABCs and meningitis sites that are participating in the case control study, and the ABC sites are shown in orange, and the meningitis sites are shown in blue. Together, these two surveillance systems cover 43% of the U.S. population, and as you will see, they're geographically distributed throughout the United States. So as of December 31st, 2008, we've received reports of 13 cases of breakthrough disease in MCV4 recipients. 8 of these were identified by ABCs and meningitis sites that were participating in the case control study. 1 was identified through VAERS only, and an additional 4 cases were identified by both sources. There was no common lot of vaccine identified for the 13 cases, and cases were identified in 6 of the 20 participating case control study sites. The next few slides will describe the epidemiology of these 13 cases. 6 of the cases were male. 7 cases were attending college at the time of disease. However, they did not seem to be freshmen living in dormitories at the time of disease onset. 2 cases were among military recruits. The median age of vaccination was 18.3 years, with a range of 12 to 19 years, while the median age at time of disease was 19.6 years, with a range of 15 to 21 years of age. 12 of these cases were culture confirmed, and 1 was PCR positive with clinically compatible illness. 8 cases were serogroup C, and 5 cases were serogroup Y. All of the available isolates have been tested using MLST, and the patterns were consistent with the most common circulating strains in the United States. All but 1 of these cases was hospitalized for their disease, and the median hospitalization time was 3 days, with a range of 0 to 46 days. There were 3 fatal cases for a case fatality ratio of 23%, and meningitis was reported in 6 cases, while bacteremia was reported in 7. And this slide shows any underlying medical condition that was reported for each case. Of note, case 9 had a history of prior bacterial meningitis at age 8 and also had a history of recurrent bacterial infections, indicating a possible complement deficiency. Case 13 had a history of aplastic anemia and paroxysmal nocturnal hemoglobinuria, and she was taking Soliris, which is a cyclosporine that blocks complement at the time of her disease onset. This table shows the time from vaccination to disease onset for the 13 cases, and as you can see, nearly half of the cases occurred within the first year following vaccination, with an additional quarter of cases occurring at each 1 to 2 years and 2 to 3 years post-vaccination. One thing to note, however, is that only the cases who are vaccinated very early on have had time to be observed for 2 to 3 years post-vaccination, and it'll be interesting to see if this distribution changes as coverage increases and time passes since vaccination. This epi curve shows the month of disease onset and the year of vaccination for each of the cases. On the x-axis is the month of disease onset, and each of the bars is color-coded to show the year of vaccination for that case. And as you can see, 5 of the cases, breakthrough cases, were vaccinated in 2005, 5 in 2006, 2 in 2007, and only 1 in 2008. So to summarize what we have observed so far with our surveillance for breakthrough cases, breakthrough cases are occurring as vaccination coverage increases, and most of the cases have been occurring in college students and in the military, where coverage with MCV is higher. Additionally, several of these cases have had contributory underlying medical conditions. It's also important to remember that even though we've observed 13 breakthrough cases, we know and expect breakthrough cases to occur. In pre-licensure studies with MCV4, 81% of subjects met the predefined correlates of protection for serogroup Y, and for serogroup C, 91% met these predefined criteria. And that immunogenicity data was at 28 days post-vaccination, and we've now had a much longer time to observe these vaccinees. There are also a number of reasons why breakthrough cases can occur, and these can be related to either the host, the environment, or the organism itself. In terms of host factors, there's always a population of non-responders to any vaccination. Additionally, the antibody response will decline over time due to antibody decay, and the host may have immune deficiencies that place them at increased risk of disease despite vaccination. There can also be environmental factors that increase risk of exposure, for example, college freshmen living in dormitories or military recruits living in close quarters. And finally, there can be something about the organism that increases its virulence, although that doesn't appear to be the case with these 13 cases. In terms of our post-licensure evaluation with MCV4, our next steps include continuing to try to enroll subjects in the case control study, while at the meantime increasing sites that are doing surveillance for cases of breakthrough disease. We are also using this observational data on breakthrough cases to try to determine the observed vaccine effectiveness of MCV4, and we are working on an analysis to try to determine if there are any additional risk factors among these cases that we have not yet identified, and we are developing a protocol to follow these breakthrough cases to evaluate their immune profiles. So finally, I'd like to thank everybody who's contributed to this analysis, including my team members at CDC, as well as all of the staff at the ABC's and meningitis sites. Thank you.